It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome to Money for Lunch. We've been experiencing some fun technical issues, so we're hoping to get the show back on the road here. So everybody stand by. All right, so we have Brian Lebovic back on the show today. We've, as you guys know, we've had some technical issues, but we got him on his cell phone. And, you know, Brian started his career as an attorney working for Janet Reno in the prosecutor's office. Since then, he has developed multiple businesses, really has become a serial entrepreneur, not just, quote, a lawyer. And anyway, so him and I were kind of texting back and forth this morning. And there's some things happening in Florida that he wanted to talk about that I thought might be of interest. And then we're going to be talking about some entrepreneurial endeavors that he's developed and new software. So I'm excited to have him back on the show. Brian Lebovic, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much. I'm super excited to be here. I really enjoyed our last conversation, so thanks for having me back.
You bet. All right, so we were texting this morning. You were saying there's some political stuff happening there that's going to affect the citizens of Florida. So catch us up. What's going on?
All right. So the big news in Florida, it's in the paper like every other day, is the change in injury law in Florida from a no-fault state to an at-fault state. And there's so much misunderstanding about what a no-fault state means that people think, oh, this is a good thing. They just don't understand what it's about, though. So they know two things. They know it's a no-fault state, and they know they pay a lot of money for a type of insurance called PIP, personal injury protection. And that's the insurance part of your automobile insurance that covers your medical bills right up front. So it's a primary insurance. In other words, you use it before your health insurance. You use it before your, you know, pretty much everything else. And it pays for your medical bills right up front. And the reason that it's called a no-fault state is that it's used no matter who is at fault in an accident. So whether you're sitting at a red light and you get rear-ended by somebody else, not your fault, your PIP pays. You run into a tree, your fault, doesn't matter, your PIP pays. Your kid is driving his bicycle and he gets knocked off his bike by a car, your PIP pays. By the way, people hate that. It just drives them crazy that. You know, the car's sitting in the garage and they've got to use their automobile insurance to pay for their kid and they're afraid their premiums are going to go up. They shouldn't, but they're still afraid. So that's the insurance we're talking about. And the reason that people are so confused about it, and I get it all the time. I mean, people come into my office and they think, yeah, but we can't sue because it's a no-fault state. And I'm like, that is not accurate. The fact is that the PIP laws, the way they're set up in the state of Florida, create something called the verbal threshold. And that means that unless you meet certain thresholds, you can't sue in the state. So if you have PIP, assuming everybody gets PIP coverage, there's some weird exceptions that people don't get PIP coverage, but assuming automobiles are involved, you almost always have PIP covering people. As long as that happens, unless you have a permanent injury within a reasonable degree of medical probability, significant scarring, disfigurement, death, or, you know, some type of significant disability, you can't sue somebody in the state of Florida, right? So what that does is it puts a limiting factor for trial lawyers to be able to sue people on small claims. The idea is that PIP is going to cover your medical bills. PIP is going to get you out of, you know, debt on this small auto accident. And if you don't have a permanent injury, you're going to go on in life. Why sue anybody? It's just kind of a no-fault situation. Doesn't matter if it's somebody else's fault. If you're back to square, right, if you're back to even, for the most part, things happen. It's not an intentional act. Why do we need to go sue each other, right? So Florida, as well as 12 other states, 11 others, has this really cool kind of threshold that stops people from suing. And what people don't realize is that the trial lawyers, as well as the insurance companies, are both pushing the idea of getting rid of PIP, right? So you're saying...
Okay, wait. So when you say getting rid of PIP, getting rid of this kind of PIP that it sounds like it's mandatory in Florida where it's not mandatory in some of these other states, correct?
Correct. So some states have mandatory PIP. Some states have voluntary PIP. In Florida, it's mandatory. And it's one of two insurances that are mandatory. People don't realize this in the state of Florida, but the only mandatory insurance for automobile is PIP and property damage, PD, which means that $10,000. So you don't even have to cover if you disable somebody else significantly. Like that bodily injury coverage is not a part of the state of Florida law right now. And I think that that's what trial lawyers feel is inherently unfair. And I will agree, it's a bad idea not to have an automobile system where people don't have to cover themselves when they hurt other people. I mean, automobiles are the most dangerous thing that we do, right? I mean, they're more dangerous than guns. So
yeah. I mean,
should at least insure, right?
Yeah, because when you think about it, just about everybody is going to jump behind a car. And not everybody is going to buy a gun or even shoot a gun. Or and a lot of places, when you go to shoot a gun, typically you do it in a designated area, like a hunting type area or to a firing range or gun range or whatever. So it's going to limit, possible accidents. But in this case, yeah, everybody's going to get in a car. I mean, you know, every teenager, every young person is dying to get into their car and, you know, be cool and all that other stuff. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot more.
You know, and the younger we are, the more our Superman complex is in our head, right? The Superman complex is that little voice that says, it won't be you that gets in an auto accident today. Other people will get into it, but it won't be you, right? So that for young people is a super loud voice. As we get older, we get more scared. We realize, you know, life is hard and life is painful and we can learn some painful lessons, but we get more cautious as we get older. But young people are like, I can go 100 on a motorcycle down the highway and I'm sure I'll be fine. Somebody else will crash and burn. And of course, we older people know that's not true. But the fact of the matter is that cars are super crazy dangerous and they kill people every day. And we don't have people insured right now in the state of Florida to pay for that loss for the other party. You got to self-insure against that. So that's where the trial lawyers say, we need to get rid of PIP. Let's get bodily injury insurance. In other words, let's swap out paying for our medical bills, because you can get health insurance to pay for your medical bills. And instead of having that pay for our medical bills, we'll make sure that we cover other people's injuries. So instead of paying that premium dollar for PIP insurance, let's kill the premium dollar because it's an expensive premium dollar and stick it on bodily injury. Of course, that immediately does two things, right? The first thing that it does is it kills the tort threshold, because if you get rid of PIP, there's no regulator on what size of a lawsuit you can file against somebody. So you hit me, I have a neck injury, it's not a permanent injury, but it hurt for a lot, and I was out of work for 2 weeks or whatever, but it's not permanent. That trial lawyer can represent me and swing for the fences. They can ask a jury for $500,000. If they lose, they lose. If they only win $10 and that's it, they still make the insurance company pay for their fees and costs for going to trial.
Right.
So the regulator comes off in Florida. Trial lawyers, and I have a trial law firm, so I know what's going to happen. I can see in my own firm, we do both types of work. We do PIP collections for doctors, and we do trial work for injured people. So I can see both sides of this fence very clearly. And the truth is that I can see that it'll help me on the trial lawyer side the minute the PIP goes away.
Right. And based on your experience, what do you think? Do you think that the PIP in Florida is going to go away, or do you think that that the insurance company is going to do their best to keep it because it benefits them?
You know, one would think that true, right? So, honestly, I think it's going to go away, and I think it's going to go away for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think it's going to go away because the trial lawyers have been working the legislature for 5 years to make this happen. They thought back in 2011 or 12 or 10, that they could make it happen, and they didn't get it to happen. Rick Scott, as the governor, felt that we needed this in place to keep them regulated. He kept it. He pushed it. And now that he's kind of at the end of his tenure, I think they see the opening. Two, I think that insurance companies are playing a long game on this. And I think that they see an opportunity, a risky opportunity, but an opportunity to get out of a difficult insurance for them, because PIP is a difficult insurance for them. Auto insurers are not health insurers, right? They are in this business of PIP, and they try to become health insurers and try to regulate medicine and just don't pay bills. And when they do that, they get into legal trouble, and then they get upset because they get sued for not paying bills. And so there's this cyclical, we're not good at being a health insurance company as an auto insurance company, that I think auto insurers recognize that even if they're making money in PIP, that administratively and overall that they'd be happier without it.
Right.
And my opinion, and this is the conspiracy theory in me coming out, the long game for them is that, and it sounds conspiracy theorish, but it makes sense when you think about it. For years and years and years, for the whole time of my practice, insurance in Florida has wanted bad faith insurance reform. Bad faith is a whole other area of law that says that if your insurance company should have, could have, and would have settled the case against you, and they didn't, and now you have a giant judgment on your head, you can sue them for their failure. So this is the protection for the consumer. It means that, let's say that, you know, I hit you, or you hit me. You know, it's easier for me this way. So you hit me in a car, right, Bert? And,
right.
And then I sue you. And I say, my injury is $100,000, and you have a $100,000 policy, tender that policy to me, and I'll drop the lawsuit. You don't have the control over whether or not your insurance company does that. They won't do that. They can look at me and say, Brian, your injury is only worth $6,000, jump in a lake. So I'm
right.
Like, all right, so I sue you. So I sue Bert. Now, the insurance company is going to defend you. They got to pay for the lawyer, et cetera, et cetera. But what happens? You only paid for $100,000 in coverage. What happens when I get $1 million judgment against you and I say to your insurance company, look, you know, Bert now owes me $1 million. You can pay me the $100,000, but he still owes me $900,000 that he's going to have to go bankrupt or do something awful. You know, you guys really messed with him by not tendering $100,000 when you should have and you could have and you would have had you looked forward and realized that my injury was worth $1 million. Now, you, Bert, are mad right now. You're thinking to yourself, I owe Brian $900,000 because my insurance company decided not to settle the damn case. I paid for the coverage. Why didn't they just give it to him and be done? Right?
Right.
You can sell me that anger, which is an actual lawsuit against your own insurance company for bad faith insurance practices. In other words, they didn't protect you when they could have by tendering your policy limits. Right? That kills the insurance industry. And the reason it kills the insurance industry is it takes the cover off of their actuarial tables and says nothing can be determined within a reasonable degree by actuarial tables. So you can't premium price and know how to charge people so that you protect your company in the future. So they're scared to death of bad faith because they feel like they get hurt because there's no limit on coverage, right? Because now I'm going to take your lawsuit, I'm going to sue your insurance carrier for the $900,000, and they're going to end up paying a lot of money when they thought their cap was $100,000. That's
yeah,
what
you know
want,
what, the,
right?
Yeah, and here's the thing, and you know this probably better than I do, Brian, but it seems to me that if insurance companies behaved just halfway decent, they would save themselves billions of dollars in lawsuits. I mean, the example you gave to a lot of people sounds far-fetched, but you know it goes on all the time.
Oh, no, no, no. It happens all the time. It's not far-fetched at all. It happens.
Right.
In fact, there's a whole legal industry of guys that I know that specialize in nothing but bad faith. This goes on every single day. So it's not far-fetched at all. That scenario happens all the time. And I'll tell you how bad it gets, all right? This is my case right now, ongoing
right.
case.
Okay.
I have a client. He was hit by a car. Fault was disputed. They felt that he was 100% at fault. We felt the fault was split between him and the driver. He was a pedestrian, right? He walked out in front of a car. I felt like she could have avoided him. She didn't. So he was laying in the hospital. He's brain damaged in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. He was a laborer, and now he's got $3 million, $4 million in medical bills facing him for a lifetime, right? $1 million already in the past, or more like $1.3 million or $1.4 million, and two more in the future. He's in a terrible, terrible spot, right? We made a demand to the insurance company for $200 in property damage. That's all we asked for. We asked for $200 in property damage, said we wanted his jeans paid for and his eyeglasses paid for because they didn't have any other insurance available to them, right?
Okay.
And they told us to go jump in a lake. They said,
no,
we're not going to give you $200. No, I'm serious. They said, nope, we're not doing that. That's not fair.
Oh,
our client
God.
Is not at fault. So we said, all right, so we have no choice, so we won't settle the case. We gave them clear opportunity. And they said no. So we sued their client, and now we're in the midst of dealing with that gigantic mess, right? So now, in the end, they're going to be ponying up a huge amount of money because they decided to stand on principle on $200 on fault money, which seems ridiculous, right? Because it's a waste of judicial resources. And so let me just get to the conspiracy theory on this. All right, so let me go back
go
to that
ahead.
Very quickly. I'll try not to belabor it too long. They want to get rid of PIP. They get rid of PIP. The regulator comes off of trial lawyers. Trial lawyers spin out of control and start suing on all small claims, big claims. Lawsuits, data-wise, rise 100% in 2 years. There's a litigation crisis in Florida. They buy a lot of advertising, and a lot of reporters get PR'd up to – you know, talk about the litigation crisis in Florida and the fix kill bad faith and to have bad faith reform so that all these little lawsuits don't keep driving insurance companies and premiums up and insurance companies into the ground. That's the long game for the insurance companies.
Mm.
And that's what's going to happen in Florida. Florida consumers right now are sitting in the catbird seat and they don't know it. And they don't realize that the beauty of what's going on in the PIP tort system is that it regulates the way bills get paid. It regulates the amount that people sue for. It keeps better lawsuits in the where they should be in the court system and terrible lawsuits out, and it puts them in the catbird seat. And they don't realize that it also stops the insurance company from getting bad faith reform because there's no need for it. That's going to change.
Wow.
And that's my worry for the Florida consumer.
Yeah.
So you
yeah.
say, what's the solution, right? Like, what's the solution?
Right.
And I have the solution. No one will listen to me, but I have the solution.
All right. What's the solution?
Thank you. I was waiting for the question. I was like, I set him up for this. He should be asking what the solution is. Here's the solution. You do both. You make the Florida consumer pay for both bodily injury and PIP. And the Florida consumer out there is saying, oh, great. This lawyer wants me to pay more money for automobile insurance, but it'll cost them less. And this is why. Because we're going to do it differently under the PIP statute. Instead of having PIP pay $10,000 upfront primary, right? Their upfront primary before your health insurance, you split it. And you do $2,500 for emergency care so that the hospitals in Florida stay solvent because PIP is loved by the hospitals, ER physicians, and ambulances because they get paid even when people don't have health insurance. And that's what you need it for. Because our hospitals are the people that have to treat these, you know, injured victims regardless of payment. Because emergency care under the federal EMTALA law, the Emergency Medical Relief Act, they have to treat injured people regardless of payment. So we need to keep those people solvent and keep them getting paid. So the first $2,500 of PIP goes right to emergency medicine. The other $7,500, because it's a $10,000 pot of money in PIP, doesn't get paid out if you've got health insurance. You go coordinate benefits, and after $2,500, you go to health, and the only thing PIP pays is your deductibles and your copays, which means that the consumer, right, now has full coverage, no deductibles, no copays, great coverage under their own health insurance. If they're buying health, they got health anyways. What's the difference? So that way you don't double up on coverage. Everybody stays solvent. Everybody gets paid, and your PIP premium goes down dramatically because in most cases – copays are never going to add up to 10 grand. So they're never going to reach the end of their bucket. So PIP goes down. We keep the tort threshold. And because we keep the tort threshold, we can offer bodily injury for the savings at a very discounted rate because people can't sue for small claims. So now bodily injury premiums go down. PIP premiums go down. Consumers get better insurance. you know, the hospitals and ambulances, which is the big problem that we're afraid of hurting, get paid. Everybody wins. It's a win-win-win, and the insurance company stays with two insurances that are mandatory, so they make more money anyways. Everybody wins.
I love it. I love it. So now my question is, how do you get that out there? Like you said, right now nobody's listening to you, so how can you get that voice out there? How can you get that idea out there? Get on the news?
Yeah, I think possibly. I you know, it's funny, but I was kind of waiting to see if this actually had legs, because I didn't think that it was going to have legs, but it made it out of the House committee, and it's an actual bill, and the Senate has a bill that, you know, it does a similar thing. The Senate bill is ridiculous because it's the House bill kills PIP completely. The Senate bill kills PIP, but it makes medical payments insurance mandatory. So what's the difference between $5,000 of medical payments insurance or $10,000 of PIP? It's the same coverage. Why are they trading it out? They're just, I mean, it's a distinction without a difference. So
right.
I was kind of waiting to see where this thing was headed. But honestly, if they would think about it and they would realize a more creative solution, everybody would win. I probably need to go up to Tallahassee and talk to them about it. I'm the only person that I know of in the state, and I'm a member of a statewide PIP group. I'm a member of a statewide injury group. No one wants to hear about it. The lawyers only want bodily injury. That's all they care about. And the insurance companies, you know, want to change the system to get bad faith reform done in the long run. And the hospitals only want to make sure they get their $5,000 of med pay or $10,000 of PIP. So everybody's got like very focused, very small thinking and limited thinking in scope.
Right.
And no one's thinking globally about the best thing for the consumer in the state.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you know, it's too bad. And this is one of those scenarios, Brian, that we see all the time, you know, and what you're seeing there in Tallahassee or in Florida, we see this in Washington all the time, where you got everybody who's interested in just one sliver of that, what do you call it, of that bill, or has a different take on that bill, versus looking at a bigger picture and saying, how is this going to affect our citizens? How is this going to affect the consumers who that, you know, our constituents? And they never take that wider view.
It's a shame that, you know, lobbyists have a big part of getting in people's heads and their ears, and people have a constituency that they play to, and our constituencies are becoming more and more polarized because they only listen to one segment and one voice. They don't have the need to listen to a variety of voices because of the choices that we have. So, you know,
right.
Like the world of Fox is very different than the world of MSNBC, right? And those two people don't intersect very much in their – they're looking across the line. I mean, people say, oh, I listen to this and that, but they don't. They don't hear it. They don't contemplate it. They don't think about it. They may listen to it for a minute, but then they discount it and say how stupid it is. In their head, they're too focused instead
right.
of looking for real global solutions.
All right, so let's talk about this. Speaking of, you know, the bigger picture, let's talk about some of the stuff that you're working on. You and I were, again, texting back and forth this morning. You were talking about the use of cloud systems, SaaS and or DaaS for law firms. Talk about, you know, these cloud-based systems.
Yeah, so, God, I love that. What a great transition. All right, let's go right into cloud computing after PIP. Cool, because I'm totally into this project that I did. I did this, you know, I've been working on it since 2009. And we started with our own intake platform because we just thought that the software that we were using to run our cases did a really terrible job on kind of figuring out what questions to ask of people that were calling in for different cases, right? So in my firm, we handle maritime cases, motorcycle cases, automobile cases, truck cases. So that's one brand of injury, right? Then we handle Social Security disability cases. That's a whole nother field. Then we handle workers' compensation. That's a whole other field. And then we have this medical bill collection for PIP, right? So there's all these things that get called into my firm. And my firm, since 2009, has gone from, you know, 112 calls a month to 1,200 calls a month. Influx of people calling, many of them with, you know, craziness, you know, like, I want to sue my neighbor because he called my dog a name or something, you know, ridiculous. We need to call those out also, these, you know, people that call with really not real cases. So we created this program, this software piece, and we've been developing it and developing it. And as I've gotten into this, I've realized the power of not only the software itself, but as we've developed it and become more sophisticated as a law firm computing-wise, the power of the SaaS idea, in other words, the software as a service idea. And you see them out, you know, in the world now a lot, you know, like people will get OneNote, and instead of downloading it locally or Word, they'll get onto the software platform, or they'll Google Docs as a, you know, software as a service platform. So you get a piece of software and you keep it hosted in the cloud. You can get into it from your phone. Simultaneously, you can go to your desktop. Simultaneously, you can go to your office computer, and they all work in conjunction because they're all sitting in this mystical cloud up in the thing, right? And now things have taken it one more step, which is why I said DAS, right? That desktop as a service. So it's not just one little program that you use individually. It's an entire desktop suite of things that all coordinate. So you want to be able to coordinate what you're doing with your case management, with what you're doing with your intake as a lawyer, and with what you're doing with your accounting, and everything coordinates through a cloud-based system. And this has been become, like, for the last 3 years, has been my passion to develop this, you know, network to be able to do all of these functions within kind of like plug and play interactivity between programs. So
right.
We created the intake platform for that. We do not do the case management platform, and that was intentional. We know that there's a lot of people out there, lawyers out there, that have their own case management software. There's lots and lots and lots of them out there. We just want to be able to coordinate what we do with what they do, right? And the same thing with accounting. Like, some people use QuickBooks, some people use Tabs 3, some people use, you know, these other, what is it, Case Logics, I think, is another one that's new. Cosmolex is one, and that's a software as a system platform. And they're coming out. So we want to be able to use these softwares, interact on a cloud-based system, so that when you as a lawyer go in and you get into your desktop, you're really not there. Your desktop is just your screen to the cloud above you in the sky, where all of your data and all of your programs and all of your information is hosted in a secure fashion, so that you can get it wherever you are, whenever you want, and never goes down. Doesn't have to worry about hurricanes, doesn't have to worry about tornadoes, earthquakes. It's always safe and always secure and always available. So this is what I'm trying to create. And lawyers are, I don't know, let's say 1,000 steps behind this from other business platforms. We just are slow adapters.
Well, and I
talk to lawyers, and, you know, like, some of them are still on the red book. They still have that red book. They keep their calendar in a red book on their desk.
Right.
You may think that's silly, but that's a lot of lawyers.
Yeah. Well, I think part of that, and you correct me if I'm wrong, look, lawyers go to law school to learn about the law. And things like technology a lot of times is left out. Marketing is absolutely left out. And same thing with doctors and other professions,
all
CPAs.
All business across the board. The entire business education, the MBA education, even in the lightest forms, management, HR, marketing, systems, supply chaining. There's nothing business-oriented about law school or medical school, which is why we get out and we think our wives can do it really well. You know, doctors turn their, you know, medical practice over. Oh, my wife runs the billing, and my wife runs the office, and my wife runs HR. I'm like, what did your wife get trained to do? Oh, she was a teacher. Why? Why do you think that that's going to work out well for you? Like, where in that education pattern do you think that running an office and doing medical billing is going to be, like, in the talent set of a preschool teacher?
Well, and the answer to that is,
so
because that's where my dad and my mom
did. I'm sure they're super, super smart people, but they never go and get the formal education to do it well at all levels. So we haven't done that. I mean, we've obviously, when you grow a business, you get your very painful Harvard MBA by overpaying for it in mistakes. And I have done that to many six figures of dollars in learning. I wish that I had taken the time to learn more about business before I went into business. But it's been a great education. It's been a great experience. So anyways, the point of the story with this intake platform is that lawyers need consolidation. And because we're this special breed of business that doesn't bind well because of state regulations, because it has to be lawyer-owned, doing things that conventional businesses do, like roll-ups, don't happen often in the law. It's very unique to see that happen. Maybe because we're very independent, maybe because we've got that, you know, ego, whatever it is. And maybe because, you know, law firms are not apt when they're built by individuals to be transferable, because most of the future business rests on the reputation of the guy whose name is the business, right? Like most people name their business Joe Smith PA. So they don't recognize marketing-wise and management-wise and future sale-wise, that's a terrible idea. Me too. Notice, Lobovic Law Group, or Lobovic, Lobovic and Diaz now. So me and my partners, you know, all have our names on the letterhead, and I've got young associates who are like, put you know, like, you know, Seaman and Gormley and Aronin and, you know, Hunt and, you know, all the other associates. They all want their name on the letterhead. It's just ego. But it's terrible for business.
So anyway, and you know what? And I think
the intake is to get them all combined, is to do this kind of like mini roll up so we all bind together.
Here in, in Arizona, a couple of years ago, they started allowing law firms to use a business name versus just a partnership name, right? So instead of having name after name after name, you know, comma, whatever, LLC or whatever,
Law Tigers.
Law Tigers, thank you. Law Tigers is a good example of that. There's another one out here called the People's Law Firm. And so I think that that's going to help with a lot of that transferability. But going back to what you're talking about, as far as the management side, and so tell me a little bit about your program. Here I am. I'm a lawyer. I have a CRM already. I have an intake program. And let's say that, you know, I am actually using technology. What is your program going to do for me?
So if you're using a CRM of value, in other words, you've got something going on that way, you're going to be hard-pressed to want to switch over because, you know, the beauty of being within my program, or maybe there might be some other programs out there. There's only one that I know of. I'm not going to mention it, but there's another program out there that's kind of doing this idea. If you're in a legal-based CRM, you're going to be in a group of other people in that CRM. And in my legal CRM, my goal is to, I want to say, sell it to friends or sell it to business partners so that we all work together as a national platform of inter-referrals. So everybody on the Lobovic intake CRM will all refer people to each other on a national basis. So if I have something come in Arkansas, which sounds crazy, like who would want to call a Florida lawyer for Arkansas? But the advent of the internet does that for you. I get cases, you know, ridiculous calls from Montana. I was in a truck accident. I'm like, why are you calling me? Well, you had a thing on the internet that said you did truck accidents, so I figured I'd give you a call. I'm like, okay, now I got to refer it to somebody in Montana. I'm going to do my best to co-counsel that and do something good with it, but it would be sure great if I knew who my buddy in Montana was and I just could zip it over to him on our joint platform and we could start zipping cases around the country for everything that we bring in nationally. Because none of us are national players except one or two guys.
Gotcha.
And it's hard.
Gotcha.
I mean, like, look at how long it's taken to create a national network. So let's create a national network instead of a roll-up, but a national network of everyone under one SaaS system that we all use, that we can inter-refer cases, keep ourselves secure. Everybody gets their own secure database. But when you want to open it up and say, I'm taking platform number 127501-40, and that'll have all the data that your client has. Send it to Joe Smith in Montana with a note saying, hey, Joe, tell me if you want this case. It all comes through our platform, and it goes into the platform right into the workflow so that everybody knows what's going on, everybody knows where it came from, and everybody knows how you got it. And these platforms, if you've got them set up well, are going to create workflows inbound and outbound that are going to market to those clients and capture those clients electronically, electronic capture, electronic docs, electronic contracts, et cetera. So we can automate all of this stuff if you're a part of the platform. Now, that concept is about Star Trek light years away for most of the solos and small firms that I know of. There are
sure.
some more advanced firms that are out there, and they're growing. Certainly they're growing. But most lawyers are not there, and they need to be given kind of a spoon-fed platform to be able to get up to speed quickly, or else they're going to just go through a very painful education and a piecemeal
right.
education that they're going to piecemeal
yeah.
in, you know, and then they'll have these disparate technologies that don't work together. So that's the desktop as a system ideal.
You know what? And it's incredible. And this is one of those things where I've said this before, it takes somebody in this, you know, that's having this problem to find the solution, right? And so in this case, you saw the problem, you felt it, and you thought, well, you know what, this is probably happening nationwide. And you set out to
yeah.
fix it.
That's what I'm trying to do. That's
yeah.
what I'm trying to do. I don't know if I'll get there fast enough because there are some other competing players, one in particular who's got a lot of money behind him. But I think that there's certainly room in this market for more than one or two players. I think that that the market is a very large market, and you know, I think it's going to be great for everybody. It'll be great for everybody who participates in whatever platform you participate in, because when you buy into the group, you're going to get that groupthink. You're going to get a lot of really good, I guess, best practices over
right.
a large group of people trying things. So you'll raise your game by knowing what works and what doesn't work in, you know, different places.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Brian, we're out of time. Good to have you back, and can't wait to bring you back and let us know what happens there in Florida. When does Tallahassee make their decision on this? When does it go before the vote?
It's a great question. You know, things get stalled out in Tallahassee very quickly. Now that the legislature just started. So we're right at the front and they're way ahead of the ball game. Last year, they weren't even close to this, you know, place for appeal. This year, they're way ahead. So it just started. The end of March, I would assume that we'll see something happen. Sometime between now and mid to the end of March, we'll get a final vote on this and figure out where it goes.
Gotcha. All right. Well, looking forward to having you back soon, and we'll talk then.
Thanks, Bert. Be well. I appreciate the time.
You bet. Good stuff there from lawyer Brian Lebovic. And as you can tell, he's very entrepreneurial, right? You know, he's obviously has a grasp of what's going on in his practice and how it might affect not only his practice, but consumers. And then on top of that, and this is the thing that we all need to do sooner or later, he is looking outside of his practice and saying, hey, what can I do? And by developing this program, this DOS-based program, this desk as a service program for other law firms, could you imagine in the future he could replace his entire income practice or practice from the income based on just selling software? And he could literally be that, you know, a major software player in the legal space. And then eventually he could probably take this and copy it into the medical space or maybe the CPA space. And so it's this kind of thinking that sets up your success in a completely different sphere, right? And I think that a lot of us overlook some of the problems that we're having could be the solution for a side project. I've talked to a lot of lawyers and doctors and CPAs and even plumbers and massage therapists. And, you know, if you're an expert in your field, you might be able to, you can turn your expertise into online videos. Okay. Definitely you should write a book, then create some online videos. Why? Because just like Brian is doing, all of this stuff that doesn't take up continuous time away from other things. If all of a sudden you were selling, you know, 1,000 copies of software a month or 1,000 members are signing up for your online courses or 1,000 books were being sold every month. That's that residual income that we all dream about as business owners. That to me is the golden ring, the golden parachute. When you can create money that's going to make money without you having to be there while you're traveling the world, while you're resting, while you're playing with your children or your grandchildren, while you're just having more fun with your life. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.